This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Your vote counts in the Pacifica Foundation election.
This is KPFT Houston.
Hi, this is Gertrude Barnstone, and I want to tell you that this matters. Your vote for local Pacifica board members matters. Active listeners and good board members strengthen KPFT, and goodness knows we need strong independent media in these times. It really does matter. So please send in your ballot today. And thanks from Gertrude Barnstone.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Welcome to the Queer Voices edition of November 12th, 2007. I was sort of saying 19 in there,
I know,
didn't
I? Where are you?
Well, oh, I'll tell you, I have been in a fog. I'll tell you that in a moment.
Okay.
I have been in a fog of illness, as many people are right now. So I hope everyone stays well. This is Deborah Bell.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
And on tonight's program, we have a whole mishmash of different kinds of topics. Jennifer will be talking to Lily Roddy about the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Jeff Reed will be here on the political beat to talk about the election review and the runoffs. J.D. Doyle, you have...
At the top of the second hour, I'm interviewing Alan Lett, a local artist and producer. That should be fun.
And then I'll have lesbian comic Sabrina Matthews, who will be in town at the Laugh Stop later this week. Plus... This Way Out, a news wrap, and some of our usual features,
and
of course, lots of music.
Music, don't forget the music.
Music.
That's right. And JD's got the music tonight, don't
right.
you?
I was telling them before the show started that Mary Gaucher has a new CD, and I know Deborah's a fan of Mary's as well as I am. We eagerly look forward to her product, and this one is called Between Daylight and Dark. The song I've picked is called Can't Find the Way. We both heard it sung by her before it was recorded at, we heard it at Mucky Duck. And it tells about the Katrina and the people from New Orleans, and it's so moving. Let's go right to that.
sat there 3 days, maybe four. Thousands stranded on the interstate. Every hour, boats brought more. Another day, another night. Another night.
Once again, this is J.D. Doyle, and that was Mary Gaucher from her new album called Between Daylight and Dark. The track was Can't Find the Way, and up next is This Way Out.
This is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 10th, 2007. In a victory that was both significant and pyrrhic, the Democrat-controlled U.S. House of Representatives on November 7th passed ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, by a vote of 235 to 184, mostly along party lines. It was the first time in more than 30 years of lobbying by queer activists for federal job protections that a vote has been held on the House floor, even though gender identity was not included. While a companion measure has yet to be introduced in the Senate, Republican President George W. Bush has signaled that he will veto any such anti-bias legislation that reaches his desk. The House-approved ENDA would protect most lesbi-gay people from workplace discrimination. However, critics charged that the decision by lead sponsor and openly gay Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts and the Democratic leadership to jettison protections based on gender identity to get the bill passed not only abandoned the transgender community, but that gays or lesbians who don't conform to gender stereotypes might not be protected by it. An amendment to restore transgender protections was introduced by openly lesbian Wisconsin Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, Enda's original co-sponsor, who broke with Frank in late September over his recommendation to strip those provisions out of the bill. But she withdrew her amendment, acknowledging that she had been unable to muster a voting majority. Some advocates for transgender rights worried that if the amendment had been overwhelmingly defeated, it could have crippled efforts to pass gender identity protections in the future.
A coalition of more than 300 U.S. LGBT organizations and many of their allies, led by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, had lobbied for the restoration of transgender protections, most opposing passage of the bill without them. The country's largest queer advocacy group, the Human Rights Campaign, was virtually alone in its support for a transgender-less ENDA. While lamenting their exclusion, it has vowed to press for transgender protections down the road. The organization lost some of its board members over its position on that issue. HRC had reportedly assured other LGBT advocacy groups that it would not actively lobby for passage of a lesbi-gay-only ENDA. Executive Director Joe Salmanese explained a last-minute reversal, however, by saying that, "We felt that in the long-term interest of the community and the movement, it should not be defeated." The group, through a story in The Advocate a day before the vote, had trumpeted a survey it said it commissioned that week, claiming that 70% of LGBT Americans prefer passing an Employment Non-Discrimination Act that does not cover transgender people over not passing the bill at all. But the story failed to specify who had conducted the poll, which LGBT Americans had been surveyed, and didn't include a margin of error percentage that typically accompanies such reports. 3 days later, The Advocate published another story saying that the poll had actually been taken 3 weeks earlier than their original report and was a random survey of 514 LGBT Americans conducted by Knowledge Networks Incorporated of Menlo Park, California, between October 2nd and 5th. The story described the questions asked and included a demographic breakdown. Notably, it revealed that only 6 of the respondents identified as transgender. And there was still no information in the story about a margin of error. In the end, however, more critical questions remain about the lingering effects of a publicly divisive debate within the LGBT communities over passage of what everyone agrees was at best a flawed bill that had no real chance of becoming law anyway.
Meanwhile, at least 31 U.S. candidates endorsed by the LGBT political action group The Victory Fund were victorious during off-year elections this week. They included Craig Covey, who clinched the mayoral race in Ferndale, Michigan, becoming the state's first openly gay mayor. Tim Eustace was elected mayor of Maywood, New Jersey, while Garden State Assemblyman Reed Gascura, who came out during his first term, won re-election. Duluth City Council winner Jeffrey Anderson becomes the first openly gay elected official in northern Minnesota. And Brian Bates, in winning a seat on the Doraville City Council, is the first out Republican to be elected in Georgia. Transgender candidate Michelle Bruce received the most votes and will be in a runoff to defend her seat on the Riverdale, Georgia City Council. And despite anti-gay smears by one of his opponents, Joel Burns received the most votes and heads to a runoff election for a seat on the Fort Worth, Texas City Council. San Francisco's straight but not narrow Mayor Gavin Newsom, who spearheaded legal marriage ceremonies for same-gender couples in his city before the state Supreme Court invalidated them, was also overwhelmingly reelected.
Elsewhere, the coalition government of Australia's Liberal Party, Prime Minister John Howard, facing likely defeat in November 24th national elections, has made a last-ditch effort to attract LGBT voters. His government pledged this week that if reelected, it would support a law for same-gender couples, giving them the same rights to pensions that married couples have. But the Howard government has actively resisted any legal recognition for same-gender couples at the federal level for more than a decade, and most recently quashed attempts by the Australian Capital Territory to enact civil unions legislation. So the surprise announcement was greeted largely with disdain by queer activists as little more than an election ploy to make the government appear more moderate. The Federal Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission issued a report in June urging changes to 58 laws to remedy inequities for same-gender couples. A headline story in the Sydney Morning Herald this week criticized the latest government move. One law changes. 57 stay? It asked. No thanks. The opposition Labour Party, ahead in public opinion polls, has pledged to implement the commission's full report if elected. However, party leader Kevin Rudd is opposed to same-gender marriage. Only Australia's relatively small Green Party, with its openly gay leader Bob Brown, supports full marriage equality.
The South Korean government has announced that it has stripped LGBT civil rights from new anti-discrimination legislation. The government had pledged in October to introduce a new all-inclusive bill that protected gays, lesbians, and transgenders among 20 listed categories. But that mobilized the country's burgeoning conservative Christian movement to argue that the proposed bill would allow homosexuals to seduce everyone and force Christian businesses to hire people against their religious convictions. The number of evangelical Christian churches has grown steadily in the traditionally Buddhist country in recent years, and they've become a vocal political force. Bowing to their pressure, the Justice Ministry said this week that it had removed sexuality and gender identity from the bill, along with several other categories, including nationality and language spoken. Human Rights Watch noted that the proposed new law was intended to strengthen the existing National Human Rights Commission Act, which already bars discrimination on the basis of most categories, including sexual orientation, by requiring the president and other levels of government to develop plans to eliminate discrimination. But as revised by the Justice Ministry, the new law would actually remove protections for many groups. LGBT and other human rights activists denounced the reversal at a Seoul press conference and called on the government to reinstate protections for sexual minorities. By eliminating the clauses in which the most discriminative acts take place, they said in a joint statement, this law becomes one that rather fosters discrimination. Lesbian activist Han Chae-yoon told reporters that she and others would fight to the end until the government withdraws its legislation.
And finally, poofter has for decades been a British slang word for gay. But in the U.S., it apparently took authorities in Virginia several years to discover that. And now the state's Department of Motor Vehicles has written to the owner of license plates with that word, 42-year-old David Phillips, saying that they are socially, racially, or ethnically offensive or disparaging, and you must return them. Phillips, a computer consultant, told the Washington Post that he's driven his car with the poofter plates over 200,000 miles during the past 11 years and never heard a complaint. For 4 years before that, he displayed license plates that said Nance Boy, referencing another pejorative, Nancy Boy, and also, he says, with no complaints. He recalls first hearing entertainer Boy George using the word poofter during a U.S. television interview, and that it's just an amusing word that I self-identify with. He says he'll go to court if necessary to keep his poofter plates, but judges have generally rejected similar requests. A lesbian couple lost a legal battle 10 years ago to keep their Two Dykes license plates. Phillips says he's a realist, so he's already thinking about a possible new battle. I wonder, he asks, what they would do with a word like queer.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 10th, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and here in the studio we have Lily Roddy, who, well, she's many things, astrologer of renown, but tonight she's here representing the Houston Transgendered Unity Committee, and we're going to talk about or have get some information concerning the Transgender Day of Remembrance. That's this Saturday at the Holocaust Museum. Lily, welcome to the show.
Well, Jennifer, welcome. It's always great to be here with you.
Well, tell us a bit about, tell us first the times and all. Let's
exactly.
get that out
Let's
first.
Let's get that going. Of course, as you mentioned, it'll be at the Holocaust Museum. That's at 5401 Caroline, very near Herman Park. It begins at 6:30. That's when the doors open. The memorial will actually begin at 7, and then we'll go till about 8:45.
And for those out in the audience that may not know what the Transgender Day of Remembrance is all about, give us a little history and background.
Absolutely. The Transgender Day of Remembrance is the ninth annual one. It was originally established in California, and it represents the transgendered people that are murdered just because they're transgendered, and this is a international event, and we honor the people that are murdered every year. And this one of the sad aspects of the Day of Remembrance is that these people are usually murdered horribly. They're stabbed repeatedly. They're just, you know, not just stabbed and maybe their purse stolen. So it's a very difficult thing to go to and to attend. And part of that also is that over the years in Houston, of course, we started the process in front of City Hall. And this will be our third year to be at the Holocaust Museum. Part of the reasons we're at the Holocaust Museum is that during the Night of the Long Knives.
Yeah, that was the little history on that. Even though the tradition of holding it currently is the ninth year, it actually has its roots back in the 1930s, doesn't it?
Exactly, and that's when the Nazis raided the very first place they raided, and they raided essentially a research center for transgender people. Of course, there were GLBT people, the whole list of initials were there, and they destroyed the books and information files, and they hauled the GLB people off to the concentration camps and essentially ran the doctor out of business during that time. So it was sort of the beginning of Nazi oppression, and not that we're so fortunate to be in the early part of that.
Well, and a lot of that story goes to, you know, that was where it began with the Nazis, and of course there's been a lot of changes around the world, but still, the transgender people in general are about what, 3 or 4 times more likely to be subject to a hate crime?
Absolutely.
And murder, is that not correct?
Exactly.
Or is it more than that?
This is part of the difficulty in actually collecting the data. First of all, is that they no longer collect hate crime data, which makes trying to figure out what hate crimes are and when they occur difficult. Secondly, particularly around the transgender issue, some of the people that are transgendered are murdered, or oftentimes their family members may hide this fact from the media so that we don't actually know that, or because we do a lot of research on this, looking up the different names and looking for the trans folks that are murdered. And we have to do a lot of different kinds of searches to find them. And so part of that is that we have to look for, you know, really degrading ways that trans people are pictured, which would be, you know, man in a dress, or, you know,
man in a
man clothes.
Murdered.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Prostitute. Yeah, okay. I've heard that many times before, that's the difficulty in distinguishing exactly who has been, whether it was a transgender person. I thought it was very interesting at the last year's celebration, a reference to a young man who was straight, who was out with his girlfriend. However, his girlfriend left him holding her purse.
Exactly.
And he was murdered because he appeared to be trans. And so, for those of you out there, this goes a whole lot deeper than just, you know, trans people. It's those that whose gender expression or gender identity or perceived gender identity can lead to a murder and a crime like this. And it's something horrendous, but it's good that at least on this day it brings focus to just that.
Exactly, and that's what we try to do. And one of the things that we've started doing with the DOR, the Day of Remembrance, is that we actually talk about the violence that sort of is allowed that leads to death, and that's part of the way we're approaching it again this year. Last year we had 3 different local trans people come and speak on terrible things that happened to them in the home, at the workplace, and we're bringing in some new people this year. One of the people we're bringing in actually was physically attacked at in the lobby of the Veterans Memorial Veterans Hospital, and
here in Houston.
Here in Houston, exactly.
In the lobby.
In
of the
lobby.
Veterans Hospital.
Four people attacked her, and
were the people arrested?
No, they were not arrested, and in fact, some of them are actually still in their position, but she was able to bring charges, and that has actually created a level of change on a national level for safety for trans folk in the Veterans Administration. We also have some people that are going to talk about their own personal experience with family members. And again, just sort of, you know, trying to walk down the street. You know, not everyone. There's a big perception of a lot of the people that are murdered are prostitutes or drug addicts. You know, and I think that that's obviously overinflated, because simply you can be, you know, shot and murdered just because you're walking down the street because of that perceived identity.
The example I gave of the young man and his girlfriend, and just because he was standing on a street corner holding her purse, he was murdered for being trans. And that's, you know, it's that kind of insanity that goes on from some people who just don't understand or don't wish to understand. Now, it's interesting, and it was a hopeful note, is the federal government passed a hate crimes bill, at least out of the House anyway, that included trans people. Now, its future, I don't even know, what's the future on that? Do you have any idea?
In this particular instance, we're sort of staying away from that side of it. We're trying to focus on the people who are a direct part of the violence rather than the sort of the political atmosphere that's going on, and trying to keep the Day of Remembrance more of a memorial and for the people that were murdered, and to emphasize the allowing of violence to continue to occur at all levels that ultimately leads to this whole idea of trans people being murdered, which of course we could always say is that not including us in hate crime legislation is a signal to people that we are not very good people, and that it's okay to murder us or to deny us our rights.
Now, I understand that over the years, the awareness of the public as well as public officials has grown also, has it not?
Absolutely. It's hard to say that we were fortunate. We were fortunate last year because we had city officials come in. We had Anise Parker came in and spoke. She's a wonderful supporter. We had some members of the police department. And we actually had local publicity in the Houston Chronicle about the event. And that was the eighth year. And that was the first year that they actually chose to actually talk about our stories. So it's just through the persistence of doing this over and over from a grassroots movement to push to the place where it is now, where we get more recognition. And last year was a very positive experience in the sense that we had a lot of people who weren't members of the trans community and weren't members of the GLBT committee. Community. I can't even speak. And because of that, we had a lot of people that were straight people there, and that's a difference, and that's the kind of difference we have to make if we're going to educate people. Because preaching to the trans folk is preaching to the choir.
Right. If I remember correctly, prior to just several years ago, about the only people that attended were trans people. It was not supported only by the trans community. But 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I'm not sure. Maybe you can correct me on that. There started to be more of the general GLB community start participating, coming and supporting, it seems to have grown in numbers too.
Absolutely. When we started, of course, we just had a struggle getting 12 to 15 people there. And gradually, over a few years, we did get up to 25 or 30 people. But the year we moved to the Holocaust Museum, we had about 85 people attend, a sort of rough estimate. And last year, we had 109 people attend. So we personally think that's a really good thing, because it at least shows a greater level of awareness, and the fact that the audience is a lot more diverse than it has been in the past. But we do emphasize during the process, during the memorial, that we're paying attention to the people who have been murdered, and you know, to not only to bring awareness, but to recognize the fact that these people were murdered senselessly.
Well, if I remember correctly, last year there was a proclamation from the controller's office.
Exactly, from Anise Parker. Yes, she brought
naming that
wonderful.
The Day of Remembrance as recognized by the City of Houston, the government, the City of Houston. Is there anything expected? Is there someone who's going to be speaking from the city this year?
Well, this year we're having Sue Lovell come in and speak. She graciously accepted our invitation to speak. And we're looking forward to having her there, as well as our lone local speakers, our own local trans folk. I'll be the MC, and there'll be a few other people from the trans community who will speak, and we're looking forward to that as well.
Give us the information again and time and all, because
okay.
We're getting short on time, and I want to make sure that we get that in.
Okay, it'll be this Saturday, November the 17th, at the Holocaust Museum at 5401 Caroline, and it begins at 6:30. The doors open, and then we have people can come in and into the auditorium at 7 o'clock. We're going to have some wine and some cheese and some food and things for people to sort of socialize and talk prior to the memorial starting.
Okay, is there a way of getting in touch with someone? If they didn't copy this down, is there an email address that they can contact?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, the Houston Transgender Unity Committee, which is HTUC, which stands for Houston Transgender Unity Committee, htuc.org, and there is information there, times, and a lot more information about the people that are being memorialized at this particular time.
All right. Thank you, Lily.
Jennifer.
Thank you for coming. And remember, this Saturday at the Holocaust Museum, the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And if you haven't been, it's important that you go. You'll be informed, but also show your support for those people and remember the people who have lost their lives this last year because they were being themselves,
being
if you
themselves,
will.
Exactly.
Yes. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
That was Jennifer Renee speaking with Lily Roddy about the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Coming up next, Jeff Reed on the political beat with a review of the recent election and a look at the upcoming runoffs. And in our second hour, J.D. Doyle interviews local artist Alan Lett about his release party for his new CD, A Moment Away. I'm Glenn Holt, and this is Queer Voices.
You never had a dream become reality. You gave up, that's what you did. You're always waiting for something to happen. Chance to speak its mind. And what if life didn't start till it's over? Will it be what you expected it to be? Oh, 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 oh. Walking down the road, staring blankly ahead, trying to remember myself. Decide to do the things that I've done. I wanna go back and figure it out. Yeah, I'm always waiting for something to happen. I'm so tired of waiting. 'Cause what if life was like an angel on your shoulder? Would you let it have a chance to speak its mind? Life didn't start until it's over. With it.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that was Josh Duffy with What If Life from his album Artificial. Guesting with him on that track were Jason and DeMarco, and that was the perfect song to play because all of those artists have been produced by our top of the hour guest, Alan Lett.
This is Queer Voices.
And we always do our little disco dance.
Our little dance, Queer Voices dance. I mean, after all, this is Naked Radio.
Yes. Well, you wish, actually.
No, well, if you saw us, you wouldn't.
Yeah, they don't want to see that. That's why it's a radio.
We don't sing or get naked.
We have with us our political beat reporter, Jeff Reed, and he's going to enlighten us with his thoughts on the recent City of Houston elections and the who's in the runoffs, why they're in the runoffs, and what kind of projections we can be looking at. So, welcome, Jeffrey.
Well, it's nice to be here, as always. And we have reason to celebrate. This election went extremely well, in no small part due to Jennifer here, who, as president of the caucus, helped. How many of your endorsed candidates get elected, dear?
We had 17 endorsements on the endorsement card. We at the election on Tuesday, we had 14 wins and one loss, and we have two runoffs.
And that is, in the political game, pretty much a home run, because
yes, it'd get us into the playoffs.
Yes, it would definitely get you in the playoffs. So the caucus did extremely well, and that I think is certainly the headline story that comes out of it. There are three or four sort of interesting points of note, in particular the runoffs. Of course, everyone's interested in those because we're going to go vote again. So in the at-large seat, this is at-large 5, Michael Berry's old seat, who is not necessarily a friend of this community.
And remember him ever being a friend of the community. If you listen to him on the radio, you'll get find it out.
Jeff was trying to be extremely diplomatic.
So, yeah, so I'm trying to maintain my plausible neutrality here. But so not a great friend of the GLBT community, and he's term limited out, so that seat needed some reworking. And it was a very wide field of candidates. There were a lot of people in there, and the caucus endorsed candidate Jelana Jones, who I should also point out was endorsed by Sue Lovell and was endorsed by the Houston Chronicle and a variety of other major Houston area organizations. So she went into the runoff, I think, really being into the regular election being the front runner, and she in fact got more votes than anyone else. I believe at the end it was 28%.
That's pretty impressive considering what, 8 candidates?
Yeah, well, and the most interesting thing about that race is there was a lot of talk about Saf Tahir, who had spent a lot of money in that race, although he was kind of trying to breathe the same political oxygen as Jelana. His base is kind of the same people. He's a Democrat, maybe not as progressive as Jelana is, but he ran into, I think, the same problem that J.R. did running against Sue Lovell last time, which is that when you have two candidates who are sort of closely aligned to each other, it doesn't always go into the runoff with both of those. Sometimes people pick someone who is different enough to kind of, you know, step aside. And so everyone was expecting one of the Republicans to get in the runoff. I think a lot of people thought Zaf might make it, but they weren't so sure. But the really surprising thing there is she ended up in the runoff with Joe Trevino.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of a dark horse, wasn't he?
Nobody saw that coming. And, you know, you can try to read the tea leaves and attribute it to a lot of things. I will will say he was at the top of the ballot, which is always a benefit to someone who is in a runoff or in a city election race where there's a lot of candidates. Sometimes people are they're just not interested in going down ballot. He has a very smooth, easy name, which Joe Trevino, right? It rolls off the tongue easily, which sounds stupid and ridiculous and a
Hispanic surname.
And that's the third thing that I think is maybe the most important. There was also Ray Ramirez, who is a member of this community, although he didn't really run a serious campaign, and I believe he ended up in last place in terms of total
about 4.5%.
Yeah, a fraction of the vote, but top of the ballot. Easy, smooth name, Hispanic surname, in an election where there was this big race in District I where the caucus-endorsed candidate, James Rodriguez, won.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the classic battle of the two major Latino political machines in Houston that kind of plays out again and again, election cycle after election cycle. So I think that drove a lot of Hispanic vote. And in an at-large race, that kind of pushed him over the top, being top of the ticket and giving him the second most vote. So that race, I think, is a clear pick for Jolanda because she has a real political machine behind her, and he's kind of a dark horse candidate who kind of had a perfect storm to get him into the runoff. And so
we have to remember, a runoff is a whole new election.
Runoff is a whole new election, and that's a very good point. Runoffs are all about turnout because most people aren't going to know that there's another election.
And what date will that be?
And it's
December 8th.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And it's a Saturday, not a Tuesday, so don't wake up Tuesday after that on the 11th and say, oh, gee.
And, of course, there will be the early voting period.
And there's always early voting. We always encourage everyone to do early voting because it's just so convenient. You don't wait in any lines.
In a runoff, too, they combine a lot of precincts, and so where you would normally go to vote may not be where you'd go to vote this time. So early voting gets you to, a good place, whether you know where it is. I always like to go over to over in West Gray.
Yeah, the West Gray Multipurpose Center is where I usually vote, and that covers most of Montrose. You can always go to the Harris County website and find out where your voting
location is. HarrisVotes.org. You can look up your precinct and find out where you're supposed to go to vote on Election Day or any of the early voting locations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the good news in that race is that I think Jolanda is picked to win in the at-large five, and she'll be she's been a long-standing supporter of the community, and she'll be a big friend to us, I believe. In the other big runoff race, I guess it's the only other runoff race that the caucus endorsed in.
Let me correct. It's the caucus PAC that does the endorsing.
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
Right. Political Action
That's
Committee.
A good point.
Yes.
So in the only other race that the caucus PAC endorsed in, we have Wanda Adams running against Lawrence Allen.
District D.
That's District D. That's going to be a little bit tougher race for her than I think Jolanda's race, simply because District D is a majority African-American district. They're both African-American candidates. Wanda has had the great luck and political skill of gaining and deserving the endorsements of the caucus and the Houston Chronicle and the police union endorsement, which came very recently, and some other things. And she was the highest vote-getter. So, again, I think the caucus-endorsed candidate has to be picked to win. But that is going to be much closer because Lawrence Allen's mother is a known politician in town. She's got some support. She's got a bit of a machine, and depending on how much hard work she's willing to do on his behalf, he could be a real threat. So look for that one to be closer than the Jolanda race. But
I do know, and I don't mind saying here, he was extended an invitation to screen with the caucus pack, but turned it down completely. So I think that should be noted.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting information to have, and especially in these runoff races, an organization like the caucus and its endorsements are extremely important and very useful to a candidate, simply because these organizations that work so hard on the ground, pushing people out to the polls to go vote, that's really what this is about. It's about the ground game of getting people into the polls.
And can't miss this opportunity. If you're listening to the program, then you're the ones we're talking about. You need to get out and vote to make sure that these two candidates do win.
And more importantly, actually, I believe, than your own vote, is you need to grab all of your friends who are registered to vote and mm-hmm. drag them out to the poll with you and go bring them out to vote.
Even if they did not vote in the general election, They can vote
in the runoff. They just have to be a registered voter in Harris County.
And the other thing is to get involved in these campaigns. Go put some time in.
It can be a lot of fun. If you have interest in any of these candidates, just, you know, go give them a phone call or an email.
This is, I believe, is Yolanda's second run for a city council seat. And, you know, just like Anise didn't make it until her third run.
That's true.
It'll be interesting. And it'll be interesting to see someone who is much more in line with LGBT politics take a seat that has been so conservative.
This is really going to cause somewhat of a shakeup on council, because Michael Berry was one of the more fiscally conservative voices and somewhat socially conservative as well. But that makes a nice segue, because we really have to talk about Sue Lovell's race, because Sue Lovell she made a gamble and it paid off for her really well. She threw all of her support behind Wanda and Yolanda this time, and she threw some support behind James Rodriguez as well.
Yes.
I think. And her three candidates were the top vote getters, but she didn't really do any campaigning for herself substantively.
No,
she didn't.
I don't think she did anything specific.
She was out and about, but it was always to advocate for Wanda and Yolanda and James. And as such, she got less of a vote than
less
one
of
might
a margin than you would have normally expected.
Yeah, surprisingly, against the perpetual.
Right.
Candidate Michael Griffin.
Yeah, this was against Griff, and, you know, he's always on the ballot, and I will say he does have huge name ID in town just because of his bar and because he runs again and again and again, and people have seen his signs. But I certainly didn't expect that race to be even remotely close.
Right.
And it was surprising when Sue won only by 6 points. Although, to be fair, 6 points is pretty substantial, and I don't think at any point anybody looked at that race and seriously thought she wasn't going to win it. But it does mean that she probably sacrificed for the community and for to have a more progressive council. She sacrificed the chance of running next time in a more comfortable position. She'll probably draw some substantial opposition next time because people will read that as weakness, which I don't think is true. I mean, when she runs hard, she'll run hard and she'll win.
One of the things that I thought was interesting too was that there's were a number of seats that had no opposition, and some of these were newcomers, people I am not aware of having run before or being very well known. And it says a lot for someone who is interested to say, oh, well, you know, nobody knows me, or I don't stand a chance. Well, just maybe you do. You know, if you're in a district that doesn't have someone that's really out there working it, you know, maybe it's time for more of us to think about running for office.
Yeah, well, so I would caution people a little bit that running for office is extremely difficult, and it's very, very hard to do and maintain a real job that pays you all the time. I mean, you have to really go to every event for every organization in your district and really work hard to build your base. So running is not something to be considered lightly, but certainly I think if more serious people stood up and were willing to face that challenge really directly and pour themselves into it, we could get some better
representation. Because it costs a lot of money to run.
It costs.
And it is not inexpensive to go out there.
Well, and more expensive than money, it costs time.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And if you have a job of some kind, you'd have to take a leave of absence if you can afford to do so.
Yeah.
And so with this new configuration of the council, which will be seated in January of 2008, any predictions of what that means to our community?
Well, it is really hard to tell. I think the broad message to take home, and that I think is sort of the only thing that you can really say with any certainty. But the broad message to take home is that Houston is getting more progressive. Houston is moving far more blue than purple, and you know, it was maybe red a while ago, and it's been purple for a while, but now it's getting very, very blue, and you can look for many of these judges' races, and there's a lot of really seriously good judicial candidates running this next time as well, because people are starting to smell blood in the water, and a lot of the safe seat Republicans that have really just not had anybody contesting them are going to wake up not after this runoff, but after the next election cycle, and be really surprised at how the demographics of the city has moved. And the good news is then that means these seats like Jolanda down to taking a more conservative seat, that means that the council is really just going to better represent the actual people of Houston and look more like the actual people that they're representing. And that is really the most important thing about representative government. And the good news is, because the GLBG community has worked very hard, in particular the caucus, but other organizations as well, we also are going to have voices there, voices from people like Sue Loveland and Denise Parker, and voices from people like Wanda Adams and Jolanda Jones, who are great friends of the community.
One of the other things is that people should be aware of, and why it's important for our community to really get out and vote on the 8th, is that before this time, so what happened up in Washington on the INDA, looks like nothing's really going to happen there. There's a chance that we could do something here as far as a non-discrimination ordinance. In the past, there was no way because there wasn't enough support on council.
Yeah, so things do start to get possible. I haven't gone around and sort of tallied all the votes, and it wouldn't surprise me if the council was hesitant to move immediately on something which has been so controversial. They'll probably want to get some good solid wins on some good solid meat and potatoes issues like, crime and garbage pickup
and taxes and
potholes and things like that before they start moving on to the things that are going to be more contentious. And that's just good politicking. That's what we expect out of politicians who support us, because more important than just passing, and this happened here, right, in the 80s, just passing the bill, you have to keep it passed.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just give people protections and then, basically empty out your bank account and empty out all of your sort of treasure just getting that win if it's just going to turn around on you again.
People in this city that are in back in the 80s, for sure, that believe in discrimination.
Absolutely.
And they certainly still exist today. This is Deborah Bell along with Jennifer Renee. We're talking with Jeff Reed about our recent city elections and a look at what may be coming up. The change on the council as we move into 2008 and the primary cycle for the presidential races, United States Senate race, mm-hmm. which is going to be a big issue for us.
Yeah, well, and Rick Noriega here is a really, really interesting candidate. A great storyline. This is a guy who went to Afghanistan. He fought for his country, but he's Hispanic, and so he's going to be going head-on against Cornyn, who is one of the most anti-immigrant guys in the Congress right now. And, how do you sit toe-to-toe against a veteran who's gone to war for the country and say, people who look like you shouldn't be allowed to come into this country?
I saw a PSA that had Mrs. John Cornyn talking about juvenile diabetes, and my mind was like doing some kind of weird thing, because this is a guy that voted against the health insurance for the children.
It's sort of hard to fault somebody like Cornyn's wife for wanting to go out there and advocate for causes, particularly for, things.
But there was a certain hypocrisy and irony.
It is sort of like, get your own house in order. Maybe you should go tell your husband he needs to support the child.
Well, maybe they don't sleep together anymore.
But this is a classic thing that we see again and again on the right, when you have like the theoretical, like in theory we're going to cut taxes, in theory we don't want government getting involved in health insurance because it costs a lot of money. That's a lot more defensible than the, in practice, here's a sick kid who has diabetes, who needs health care, and if the state isn't going to provide it for them, they're not going to get anything. So the disconnect I think you're feeling is one of, this is the theoretical construct of no taxes, small government, and that's Cornyn's sort of general position. That's the political fuel that fires him, and then his wife going out and advocating for sort of specific individuals with specific illnesses, and there is a disconnect, but it happens all the time. Cheney and his gay daughter and their child, and he gives mouth service to the idea that gay people should maybe have some rights maybe somewhere once or something, but he's not going to lift a finger to help it, right?
Yeah.
Well, everybody should own one.
Well,
of course, as GLBT people, we certainly on the city level, you know, Mayor White certainly has made an agenda of what he wants to see happen for this city. And do you think this council will be more in line with helping him achieve some of those goals in his final term as mayor?
Well, I certainly think this council is probably shaping up to be more advantageous for Bill White. Look for Bill White to continue, and he's done this a lot in the last couple years, but continue to position himself to run for a statewide office. That's really where he's going with it. He's an extremely popular mayor. You look at his vote, you look at the undervote for him, and the undervotes are when people go to the polls but they don't vote in a specific race. The undervotes in his race were lower than in many of the other uncontested races where you usually have a lot of undervotes. People don't like voting for somebody if they don't have an opponent. And so he is extremely popular, and I think he would do very well in a statewide run, and so he's going to be tacking his kind of political future on what he can do in Houston.
Well, that's just it. He's formed this agenda, and then he's done stuff.
Yeah,
he's done what he said he'd do. And plus the outstanding work that he did with what happened with Katrina.
Yes,
that certainly
absolutely
pushed him forward.
Well, he is a nice man, he's a very smart man, and he's very astute politically, and so I think he has a good shot at, I think he's probably going governor, and I think he probably has a good shot at being certainly one of the top shelf candidates, if not the top shelf candidate running for governor.
Yeah, he should be well financed, if nothing
absolutely
else.
And then certainly this
will, and he has a great machine that works
yeah,
really well.
And then certainly this will put us into the council that may move forward into having a mayor in East Parker.
Yeah, nothing would be better than to have the council looking like what we think it will look like after this runoff with Yolanda and Wanda winning, and having Anise as mayor, because that would really be an ideal situation. When I came to Houston, the idea that you could have a lesbian mayor and you could have a very powerful, strong lesbian on city council who's working to build coalitions with other communities and spending her political capital to help other communities elect officials who are friends of our community. I mean, I don't think there's any city in the U.S., maybe even in the world right now, that has that kind of really just GLBT-run and GLBT-friendly city government.
Well, Jeff Reed, our political pundit, thank you for being with us here on Queer Voices. Jennifer, thank you for your commentary from the Houston HGLBTPBAQ hour.
Thecaucus.org.
Yeah, thecaucus.org.
Thank you. And you are listening to Queer Voices.
Coming up in our second hour, Deborah Bell talks with lesbian comic Sabrina Matthews, who will be in town at the Laugh Stop later this week. And at the top of the hour, J.D. Doyle interviews local artist Alan Lett about the release party for his new CD, A Moment Away, which is what this is, and music for his first track, this is Loud.
It just might be time, the night is mine. Speakers breaking, body shaking, ooh, it's making me crazy. You're making me crazy. Let's wait till the room fills up. The crowd is moving. They're gonna turn it up, turn it up. I like to listen to my music loud. I like it when the DJ plays my style. I like to listen to my music loud. So if you like it, come and dance with. I like to listen to my music loud. I like it when the DJ plays my style. I like to listen to my music loud. So if you like it, come and dance with me. They're all watching me. Nobody's stopping me. On, it's just a matter of time. If you like it, come and get it. Don't forget it's for you. I do it all for you.
90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that song was Loud. I mean, that was the name of that song. It's by Alan Lett, and you've seen him on the cover of Outsmart. He's just released his third album. He's produced a number of albums for other artists. We have him live in the studio. Welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you're like 23, and you've done all this stuff.
I am 23. I have done a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Let me back up. How did you get started in music?
I started back when I was in high school. I started writing some music and decided I needed a way to record it. So I used my computer and started recording myself, and that's, you know, kind of where I got started. And the recording and the songwriting and singing, it just kind of all came together in one package.
You were producing yourself?
I was producing myself, yeah.
For your amusement?
For my own. Yeah, my mom loved it, of course. She always played the CDs in the car, and it was just kind of a hobby, just kind of a way to, just an outlet for me at first.
What was your first actual quote-unquote recording?
The first recording, goodness, the first recording I ever did was a song called Choose the Cross that I wrote just a long time ago, and there's been like 90 some odd versions of it since then, but that was the first time I ever recorded, and I would not go back and listen to it now, and I'm glad there doesn't exist a version of that anymore.
So your first release was in 2004?
In 2004, yeah, that's the first one I did, the Noise Next Door.
Mm-hmm.
The first big one, the first ambitious one, was in 2004, yeah.
I love that CD.
Thank you.
I especially love the rapping. You brought someone to do rapping on the song.
I did.
Which track was that?
It was the last track, the remix that I did of a song of mine called From Now On. And I had a friend of mine come in, and actually I knew he rapped, and I said, hey, would you mind doing a rap part to this song? And like the next day he came and had this amazing little rap part and came in and to the studio, which is actually at my parents' garage at the time, and recorded it. So,
and how did you start working with Jason DeMarco?
That actually, good segue, because it was that CD that they heard that they liked. They liked the production and the song, the style and everything, and they contacted me and said, we like a couple of the songs, can we record it? And I said, sure. And then they, about a month later, came back and said, actually, you know what, we like your production too, do you mind recording a couple songs for us at your place? And at the time, my place was in between my parents' garage and storage, and it was just all kind of a mess, and I didn't really have a home studio. So it was that CD, their recording with them, that got me set up where I am now. And it grew into recording that entire project of theirs till the end of time.
So the first CD you produced by someone else was that one?
The first full-length CD that I did pretty much entirely by myself was Till the End of Time for them.
Also an excellent recording. I'm very impressed with the production on that.
Thank you.
You also have a CD called Heart, Soul, and Hymns.
Heart, Soul, and Hymns, yes. That was about a year ago. I did a concert where I sat down, and I grew up in the church, and I know a lot of old, you know, I grew up singing these old hymns, and I just really wanted to do a project where it was just piano and vocal and something very intimate, and that was the idea, the genesis of that project, and it grew into, there's 21 tracks on that CD, because there was so much I wanted to put on it, and so it's to the brim, is what I like to call it.
Okay, and your latest CD is a pop CD. How do you balance the pop and the Christian music?
Well, you know, it's the same thing, and I'll use this parallel with Jason and DeMarco. You know, they started in a religious, spiritual church setting background, and then they with Till the End of Time, which was kind of, for me, it was kind of a, I saw them doing this, and and I had just wanted to experiment with different styles, because I feel, you know, I'm growing up and entering in this world, especially coming out, you're entering this world of being gay, and everything's new and different, and kind of having to relearn some things, I think, or at least that was my experience, and that all those songs just kind of were based on all these things that I had to say.
Have you found a difference in promoting the Christian music?
Oh, yeah.
Or promoting the pop music?
Oh, yeah. It's obviously I can't do a lot of the stuff on this latest CD, A Moment Away. I can't do a lot of it if I were to go perform in a church, which is what I did last week in St. Louis. I was performing, and I picked a couple of the songs from that CD to be able to promote it, but it was hard because I couldn't do, like, I didn't want to do Loud, the one you just played, because that might have been a little out of the comfort level of some of the people mm-hmm. in this beautiful sanctuary where they had the concert. So,
but by the same token, if you're doing a Pride event, you're probably not going to do a Christian song.
Well, I wouldn't do a Christian song at a Pride event, right? Wait, what was the question?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, well, just, you know, it's just you do different things.
So
you're different
split personality.
No, I have one very solid personality.
How has your music changed since your first CD?
Well, it's grown up a lot. And even before this, when I did Heart, Soul, and Hymns, the last spiritual album I did, even with that one, it's, you know, I, as you experience, and especially, and I'll say it again, coming out, you learn so much about yourself spiritually and about the world and just how you view it and your faith and everything. And you feel like you have a lot more to say, and certain areas where you once felt comfortable may now be certain areas where you feel a little bitter. And when you're talking about, you know, gays in the church, is always that area where a lot of people have really bad experiences, and I had a relatively good experience with all that, but there was still just a lot of, you know, you see a lot of things that just, I felt like I had different, more grown-up, more insightful things to say, and then I go from insightful to A Moment Away, which is, some of the songs in that CD are not insightful at all. I'll be the first to admit.
They're fun.
They're fun.
Do you prefer working on your own CDs or others?
I get a very different satisfaction from working on my own stuff than I do with other people. It's just different. I can't say one's I like better than the other. I love creating music with other people and collaborating and, you know, bouncing ideas off of each other and just creating something. But I also, you know, for me, it's an outlet. Like I said, I have a lot to say sometimes, and I'm just there by myself in the studio just putting these things together, and it's therapeutic for me. So I need that balance, obviously. So,
well, if you're working with Josh or Jason DeMarco or mm-hmm. Alan Hanks, you're trying to please them, and also they want some control too.
A lot of times it's, you know, these artists will come with amazing ideas, and then sometimes they'll come with ideas that are really rough and raw and need some direction, and that's where I step in, and sometimes the ideas are just, you know, terrible. at least to me. So we'll work through something, and 'cause I feel like I have a pretty good ear as far as like what people like to hear, and you know, and it's a very fun creative process to work with somebody in the studio like that, very intimate.
And you're in a movie now.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
We're All Angels is the name of the movie. It's Jason and DeMarco's, the documentary that was made about their journey, creating, it was filmed back when we were recording, the Till the End of Time album. So I'm in it talking about my experience, and that was shortly after I was coming out. And so my own personal journey was reflected a lot in that, producing that CD and what went into it. So, I'm featured in quite a big segment, and my mom is actually quite a big
Is that going to be on DVD?
It will be. There's some big plans in the work for it right now that I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's some really exciting things could be happening with it, so we're really excited.
Okay, and do you do a lot of performing?
No, actually, I don't. I am in the studio so often and with other people, and I rarely find time to get out on the road and, you know, do something. And I really just love being
okay,
in.
Okay, but I think you're going to be doing some performing this Friday night.
This Friday at Salud Winery. I'm going to be, and that's 3939 Montrose is the address of that.
Two blocks south of Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And I'm having a release party, and it's different from normal release parties because I don't actually have the CD. The CD is not, the CD is an MP3 CD. It's something that I decided to do because I don't perform as...
Your whole CD is in the sky.
The whole CD, yeah. It's in the airwaves. It's on the net.
It's on iTunes.
It is on iTunes.
A lot of artists are putting their work sometimes first, sometimes only on iTunes, mm-hmm. and it's a great way to get the music out there without the investment of a hardcore
mm-hmm.
packaging.
Mm-hmm.
The release party is this Friday, that's mm-hmm. the 16th, mm-hmm. 7 p.m. at Salud, S-A-L-U-D, Winery. Mm-hmm. 3939 Montrose, that's about two blocks south of Alabama. Alan's going to be performing how many songs there?
You know, it's still up in the air. I'm not sure. It'll be a handful. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. I want to close with another song from your CD. Before I do that, I want to tell people your website is on MySpace. You go to MySpace and you search on Alan Lett, A-L-A-N-L-E-T-T. Mm-hmm. You'll find it really easily.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us just briefly about the track, The Same Song.
This same song, I wrote it. We were doing karaoke, and I was up there singing, and there was this guy in the audience, or in the bar, and he was... I perceived the way he was looking at me as flirting, and I just thought it was the cutest thing ever that this guy was standing out there just completely enamored with what was happening on the stage, and I kind of created this fairy tale in my head of these two guys that meet, but they don't ever get a chance to talk to each other that night because the crowd is so crazy and all over the place that they that. He's just kind of saying this out loud, you know, I'll be singing the same song I was singing last night, that's how you'll remember me, so tonight when you come to the karaoke bar again.
Okay, and please check out Alan on iTunes and on the MySpace, and next Friday night at Saloon Winery, we're closing with the track, The Same Song. This is Queer Voices.
Tune in my head and your face was on my mind. Pieces of an evening that I can't fit together, had a little bit too much wine. I started out singing a song just for fun, but then I ended up singing to you. I never found out your name, it doesn't matter, cause I'll be back again tonight. You did, yeah.
Let from his album A Moment Away, and that's going to be featured at the new CD release party at Salud Winery this coming Friday. And coming up next on Queer Voices, lesbian comic Sabrina Matthews. This is Queer Voices.
Hi, Sabrina. This is Deborah Bell along with Jennifer Renee.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
Hey, how are you?
We're good. You know, I feel like I already know you because I saw you on Last Comic Standing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you caught me in your refrigerator.
That was you. And
it's
then
possible.
We have this wonderful article that was in Outsmart Magazine by Nancy Ford where she asked you a bunch of questions.
Yeah, that was a great interview. I really enjoyed talking to you. I haven't read it yet.
You're a little bit familiar with Houston already. I understand that you did go to Kindred Spirits when it was around. And
have I completely dated myself?
Well, I'm sorry to say that was a little telling because it hasn't been around in a while. And
where
then,
we went, just in case this will even narrow it down more, we also went to the ranch and the Rockin' Horse.
There you go.
Boy, you know, I remember both those places.
You're going to send us all into nostalgia here. And then, of course, the famous House of Pies, also known as House of Guys. And when you come, I'll be glad to take you there. It's one of my favorite places. We took Kate Clinton there one time after a show, so you'll be in good company.
Right on. I love Kate.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't? And then, you were on this Last Comic Standing, and I guess when I first ever saw that show, I always thought that it was amateurs that were getting a break into showbiz. But the reality is that a lot of the people that are on that show are folks that have been at it a number of years. And
I'd say everyone who makes it to the semifinals are people who have at least done professional stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, some of the people that were in the finals had been doing it 15 years. Some of it had been doing it 3.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they gotta, you know, they're looking for different things. You know, who's gonna grow? Who's gonna get good, do good television? You know, so on and so forth. But no, it's not total amateurs. Although there are some amateurs in that, in the rounds, in the initial audition rounds, where the people are waiting outside on the street.
And some of them, you could really tell that, too.
Yeah. I actually auditioned in 2 different cities, and I could not believe how many people I overheard say, no, I've never done comedy before, but I think I can figure it out. I'm just going to write a little something down. I mean, I actually saw a guy sitting in a lawn chair out on the sidewalk in Minneapolis. I'm going to knock this on the head. I got a few minutes. I'm just going to write up something funny. And okay. You go on.
Yeah, that was the part that was funny, doing it.
Yeah, that's the part that's funny. And so how long had you been paying your dues before that event?
Oh, it's been, this year is 16 years, 17 years, somewhere in there.
Oh, so that's, and, you know, I always have commented, because I have known quite a few of them, that there is an abundance of lesbian comics, and I always say that's because we have so much material. It's pretty funny being a lesbian sometimes.
It is, although the irony of that is that we're known for not having very good senses of humor, aren't we?
I know. What's with that?
I don't know.
I have an excellent sense of humor.
I think that that's because we have had to have it in order to survive. Now, you're going to be in Houston at the Laugh Stop starting, what, Thursday night?
Starting Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, okay.
Wednesday through Saturday.
And the Laugh Stop, which will be known to most of the people in this community as being in the same complex as the Guava Lamp.
Mm-hmm.
If you know where the Guava Lamp is, how to find Laugh Stop, which is right off of Allen Parkway and Wall Drive,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
No, right there on the corner.
Yeah. You can't say just Wah. You have to say Wah Drive.
Oh, sorry. It's on Wah Drive. Why is there a Wah Street and
no,
a Wah
it's just,
Parkway?
It just sounds
and
weird. It just sounds,
it just
weird
sounds like you're from Texas. Wah.
Wah. You're on Wah. Anyway, and I was thinking, okay, it's going to be Sabrina, and Sabrina's going to be doing this show. And I don't know how such a butch girl got such a frilly name. Yeah.
Well, they do name you before you grow up.
Yeah,
that's
you're,
how that happened.
You've commented how your mother wishes you were a little more freely.
Yeah,
and she's totally supported it. So that should have been a clue right there when she gave you that name.
She named me after Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, well, of course.
Oh, yes.
And I can see why.
I can see why.
there is indeed a, a panel, but that's not right. What do you call it? The group of you that will be performing together?
Oh, I just say it's a comedy show. There, usually on a comedy show, there's three comics. There's a opener who often hosts, and a feature, and then a headliner, and I'll be the headliner.
All right, the headliner.
Yeah.
Well, what time does all this start on Wednesday?
That's a great question. You could find that on my website, which is SabrinaMatthewsWith2Ts.com. I don't want to guess. I'm not positive.
It says in the Outsmart magazine, Darn Funny Comedy, November 14th through 17th, 8:30 and 10:30 p.m.
At yeah, the I think the weekday shows are 8:30 and the weekend shows are 8 and 10:30.
Yeah,
but as I said, I think.
And it's 526 Wall Drive. And it says, why? Because who needs a good laugh more than you? And reservations can be made at 713-524-2333 or www.laughstop.com, and that's laugh, L-A-F-F. And so back to getting to know more about Sabrina Matthews, you also have been a part of a documentary that was done in 2006 called Laughing Matters More,
mm-hmm.
which includes our own Houstonian Vicky Shaw,
who is a lovely girl, and Elvira Kurtz in that as well. It's a great movie.
Isn't Vicky just something? I mean, she is.
I love Vicky. I'm hoping that she's going to be around. I think she might be moving back to that area.
She has said that a couple of years ago. I heard her say that, but I haven't seen her yet. And then you have a CD that is out that was done at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco in 2002, and it's called... Now, what was I saying?
Yep.
And I take it that that's kind of a tagline that you use.
Actually, it's not. It's
no.
I still am very proud of that CD. I used to meander a little more in my sets.
Uh-huh.
Just sort of, you know, one joke was inside of another joke, was inside of another joke, and a lot of the things I'm doing right now are not so much like that, but I would sometimes be, you know, I would be three joke tiers down, and I would be backing out trying to remember how the whole thing got started. So I used to, there were a few times on stage where I was like, now what was I saying? And there would always be people in the audience who knew exactly what I was looking for, what was the original story, and they would say it, you know, as if it was to a grandmother that had forgotten her train of thought. You know, they would give me the last thought of the first story, and it's really a big compliment, you know, that people are listening that hard that they'll feed you what's going on.
She'll start off with something, and you think that she's gone completely away from it, but somehow she works her way back to it.
So. Hey, who is this? I'm sorry?
Kate Clinton does that. What are you working on now after, are you on a current, you know, U.S. tour or what?
I'm always on a current U.S. tour. I'm actually sort of bringing my year to a close because in December I'm going to go on a scuba diving trip with my dive buddy. I'm very excited about
that. Where are you going?
The Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
We were trying to do it fairly cheaply and sort of bust out on our own and do our own little dive trip, and so we're really excited about that. Comedy wise, I'm actually really excited about Houston. When they booked me, they asked me if I wanted to do a strictly gay show, or, you know, if I wanted to be a gay headliner, you know, with other comics, and I was like, oh, give me a regular show, because what I really like is to have I love to have a lot of gay people in the crowd, but I think it would be nice if a lot of their sort of standard crowd would branch out and come see what I would be like, and maybe them, you know, I think the more variety there is on a show, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And do you know who you'll be appearing with in
Houston?
I don't. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out.
I don't. It's a total mystery. That's not uncommon. You know, you show up at a town and you might be there with one of your best friends in comedy that you just haven't talked to in a while. You might be there with somebody you've never met before. And you know, you have a whole week to be friends with that person, and then you may or may not ever see or speak to them again. It's sort of a war zone buddy thing. I used to work in England quite a lot, and I remember going into a comedy condo at this club called the Hyena in Newcastle, England. And the Newcastle they refer to, I think, was built in the 1300s. So it's not that new. And I walked in, and there's, you know, the guy I'm going to be sharing the apartment with, there's three or four bedrooms. I walked in, and he's like, oh, would you like a cup of tea? And I was just like, wow, this is interesting.
A lovely cup of tea, you know.
Yeah. And that's sort of a standard, you know. In England, it's that stereotype does ring true. Would you like a cup of tea?
It's always a lovely cup of tea. And you say, oh, I just broke my arm. They'll say, well, let's have a lovely cup of tea. And British friends of mine have said that's true. You know, that's exactly what will happen. No matter what happens, they'll offer you a cup of tea.
Quickly, your CD you were talking about from 2002, is it still available?
Yeah, I have. I just did a reprint on it. I really, I have a lot of material that I really want to do on a new CD. But there's the trick of getting a good recording situation, and a set you're really happy with. It actually, the recording situation is the hardest thing to get, and a nice full sounding crowd. The CD from 2002, there's no sweetening of the crowd. In fact, I don't think most comics sweeten their CDs at all, but it was just a really great crowd, and they were interactive, but they weren't derailing anything. It was just really great.
If someone's interested in that CD, how could they get it?
Well, they can get it on CD Baby, and just through my website. That'll take you there.
Oh,
but
okay.
I'll have a bunch of them at the show, and I'll also have DVDs of Laughing Matters More.
Oh, great.
In my little bag of tricks.
Yes.
And once again, that's Sabrina Matthews at The Laugh Stop, 526 Watt Drive. And it's going to be November 14th through the 17th. You can call 713-524-2333 or go to the website www.laughstop.com. Now, Sabrina, I want to ask you, what is the funniest thing that ever happened to you?
Oh, I have no idea. Well, once I was on the radio and my cell phone started ringing. Oh, wait, no, that's right now.
that's okay.
The funniest thing that ever happened to me. Okay, dead air, bad in radio. Now I can't remember anything.
Was it when you were kicked off the island?
When I was kicked off the island. Do you think that they're actually hoping that someone will die on one of those shows?
I'm afraid of that. You know,
that woman that looks like she's anorexic.
I don't watch those shows, but from what I hear about them, you know. But thank goodness Last Comic Standing wasn't like that. Well, we really are looking forward to having you here in Houston. And like I said, we have a date to go to House of Pies if you like.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to 3 a.m. when I sit bolt upright because I've realized the funniest thing that ever happened to me.
Yes, and feel free to call me. Because that's when it always, maybe it just hasn't happened yet. Maybe it'll happen while you're here in Houston.
Right. Yeah, the funniest thing yet.
So thank you for being with us on Queer Voices, Sabrina Matthews.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Jennifer Renee and Deborah Bell talking with lesbian comic Sabrina Matthews, who will be in town at The Laugh Stop later this week. Coming up next on Queer Voices, more programming from This Way Out.
Mm-hmm.
Is She a Girl? That was Lisa Jackson and Girl Friday from their self-titled EP. This is Queer Voices.
The distribution wait is over for the chubby champion of last year's Tribeca Film Festival, and in just a few more minutes, our Steve Pride will tell you all about it.
When I recognize how beautiful we are, it makes it easier to become that shining star.
Two dozen up queer and personal recollections make up Dragonfly Stories, the first offering from a Kansas City, Missouri-based publishing company called Rainbow Legends. The new You'll Laugh, You'll Cry book touches on love and hate crimes, coming out and building community, courage, faith, and families. It's about transgender and cross-gender, dating, living with HIV, and most of all, about accepting oneself. Rainbow Legends co-founder Joyce Cascio chats with This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel about the anthology and the company's future plans.
Tell us about Rainbow Legends, how it got started, and what you're doing today.
Rainbow Legends, we're a publishing company that main focus is giving voice to the stories of our community, the LGBTQ community. And it really started just this past March. Amanda and I, my partner, went on an Olivia cruise. And while we were there, we had the opportunity every night to sit with a different couple and talk. And what we found over those 7 days, many of the women had a hard time, even in this very out environment, talking freely about their love story or about their coming out story, about their life. And we would have to kind of coax it out of them. We realized that a lot of people live invisible lives. A lot of the folks within our community really are not free. So when we were disembarking the ship, I said to Amanda, I'm going to write our love story. I'm a writer. I felt a shift on that vacation. Our focus needed to change, and within 2 months, we realized it was going to be bigger than our love story. We actually were going to be telling our community stories. And on June 1st, we changed our company name from Nineveh Press to Rainbow Legends.
And have you gotten a good response from this?
Yes, we have. We really see this as a form of activism, sharing our stories, giving voice to people who otherwise have felt invisible. And that's really what we hear over and over and over, that people are dying to share their story. When we've gone to places like a Pride or like a gay bookstore or a gay coffee shop, and people would show up just wanting so deeply to share their stories. You know, I've been out for 30 years, and so I thought I knew a lot about our community and about our struggle, and so I'm a better person today than I was 6 months ago, because these stories have changed me, and I know that's what it's going to do for our community as a whole, also for the rest of the world who will read these stories.
Tell us how you chose the stories and how you're going to approach releasing this.
We had over 70 stories that we recorded, and what I found was a lot of people were nervous about writing their story, and so we went out and purchased video equipment, audio equipment, and we began taping people all across the country. So we had to come home and begin to sift through all of those hours and hours of video, and we narrowed it down to 24 stories that are just really powerful. Transgender stories, coming out stories, love stories. There's one story of a couple, they've been together for 38 years, a gay couple in a monogamous, loving relationship, and they're precious. So the book is just filled with these stories that will make you laugh, make you cry, but they'll all make you proud to be part of this community. As far as getting it out to the public, one of the things that Amanda and I decided was that we wanted to give back to the community. Whatever the proceeds, you know, in the sales of the book, we wanted to give a portion of that back. So we had thought about having it carried in Barnes & Noble's or available on Amazon, but 40% automatically is taken off the top whenever you are carried in a major bookstore like that. And the consumer always pays the full price. Wouldn't it be incredible if we could control where that 40% goes? And so what we did was we just sent out an email to different agencies and said, our book is coming out, Dragonfly Stories. Would you be interested in being listed as an organization that if people purchase the book through our website, they could just choose your organization as one to get the 40%. Every day we get more people calling us who've heard about us.
Will you be putting together perhaps other collections?
Yes, we are set up right now for people to submit stories even right online. Our next volume comes out on June 24th, and it will be Dragonflies Volume 2.
Oh, great. And that's in 2008.
Yes, so we are ready and going full stream already with working on Volume 2.
The title of the book, can you comment on that?
That actually came when I was meeting with our graphic designer, David Moore, and I was explaining to him what it was that we really wanted to convey. I really wanted them to get to know us. I want people not to be afraid of us anymore. And so what he came up with was in Japan, the dragonfly is a symbol of a victory and happiness, success and strength, you know, all these wonderful things, and yet so many people fear a dragonfly. So when we got talking about it, he said, Joyce, we are the dragonflies. Our community is really the dragonfly.
There's a theme song connected with this book.
It was written by Gwendy Joyson, and it's called Not Enough. The chorus begins with, it's not enough to tolerate our differences. Hear the call for celebration. When I heard it, I thought, that is it. That is the song that really captures the essence of what Rainbow Legends is all about.
Wendy Joyson singing Not Enough, and publisher Joyce Cascio chatting with Dixie Treichel about the Rainbow Legends book, Dragonfly Stories. For more information, log on to rainbowlegends.com.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. Better us than the government of George W. Bush, right? No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
He's frequently the chubby friend or the troubled teen with a gun on U.S. TV, so Ash Christian may be a familiar face. But with the release of his film, Fat Girls, Christian adds writer, director, and producer to his bulging resume. This Way Out's Steve Pride sits down with the Wundergay to talk about his movie and his own inner fat girl.
I suppose you want to know what being a fat girl is all about, right? If I knew right now, I'd tell you, but I can't really put it into words. Ever since I was a little kid, I felt like this little fat girl stuck in this stupid body of mine. You don't have to be fat to be a fat girl. You don't even really have to be a girl, it's a state of mind. And when you're in a fellow fat girl's presence, you know it right away. It's almost like an unspoken club that no one really knows they're a part of. This is the journey to finding my inner fat girl.
Start by introducing yourself.
Hi, I'm Ash Christian, director, writer, and star of Fat Girls.
Fat Girls. What's it about?
Well, Fat Girls is a small-town Texas comedy about a gay boy and his 300-pound best girlfriend growing up and not really fitting in and not really caring that they don't. It's a funny movie in a time that I think we need to laugh.
Mr. Miller, I called you here today to talk to you about your future plans when school ends here in a couple of days.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what you want to do?
I want to move to New York and star on Broadway.
Oh, honey, don't you think you'd be better off going to school, learning a trade, so you could make a living and support a family?
Well, I don't really want a family.
Really?
No.
Then what do you want?
I want a boyfriend.
Oh! I didn't know.
Can I have the excuse?
Well, of course, but do this for me. I just got this from the Christian Counselors Convention that I went to, and it's for our alternative lifestyle students.
Alternative lifestyle?
Yes. Those students that choose to go against the grain.
Gee, thanks.
The film doesn't have a huge budget.
No.
But it's a great script, but casting is so dead on perfect.
Thank you. Casting is such an important part of making a movie for me. I won't give in. You know, if I don't have the actor, I just won't make the movie because it's too important. It's 95% of movie making, I think. The girl that plays Ashley, the 300-pound like best friend, she'd never worked before as an actor. And I met with probably 15 or 20 girls for that role. And they all had resumes and they'd done stuff. And she came in and just without anything, really. And she was Sabrina. And nothing I could do about it. It was just her, you know. I thought she was brilliant. And Jonathan Wet, who plays my theater teacher in the movie, he did a movie called Tarnation, which I really liked. So he was the only one that I knew that was going to be in the movie while I was writing it, but I really respected his work in Tarnation, so I wrote it for him.
The casting sessions must have been big on craft services.
They were huge on craft services. It was a fun casting session. That's my favorite part of making a movie, really. I mean, it gets old when the actors aren't good, but Deborah Thaker, who plays my mom in the movie, she's a great comedian, and she played my mom in another movie right before this, and so I was just like, will you please play my mom in Batgirls, because I didn't have anyone that I wanted, and she's so funny.
Rodney, come here, now.
I found your tape.
What tape?
The one with the two queers sodomizing and filleting each other 10 ways till Tuesday?
Not my tape.
I think it is.
No, ma'am, it's not.
Oh, it is, too.
Never seen sodomizing, no way.
I had all the girls over from Buddies in Bereavement, and we were going to watch the Kirk Cameron film, and that's what played instead.
Maybe it was Kirk Cameron.
I don't think Kirk Cameron would take a buddy for coffee and then for a ride on the Hershey Highway, do you?
Do you really think I'm gay? Really?
Look me right in the eyes and tell me you're not gay.
I'm not a queer. I'm not a queer. I'm not a queer. I'm not a queer.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
That's fine.
I'm glad.
Why do they go for coffee and do that? Mom.
What do you want the audience to take away from Fat Girls?
The lead character really doesn't have a problem with his sexuality, whereas in most gay films, that's the main issue, you know? But I thought there needed to be something that that wasn't the main issue. He just was cool with it, and people were kind of cool with it. But it is about self-acceptance, Fat Girls, about accepting your inner being, whether it be the gay character or the 300-pound character or the Cuban refugee character, you know, whoever it is, just sort of accepting yourself for yourself and moving forward. There's so many movies out there for mainstream audiences that deal with the football quarterbacks and the cheerleaders and all this stuff, and even gay movies that have the guys with eight packs. There's enough, you know, and they're needed, but there was nothing really for the chubby kid who was sort of a social outcast, or, you know, the outsiders. And I mean, I think everyone's felt like an outsider at one point in their life. So this was the movie for them.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
I'm gay. That's no secret.
Really?
You know that, right?
No, I thought I was butch.
People just don't understand. They think it's my choice or something. It's not.
I mean, what about your father?
He was straight.
How did you come out to your own family? How autobiographical is this film?
Well, it's probably, like, partial. I mean, it's half autobiographical, I'd say. I came out to my father. I didn't really mean to. He's from the Bible Belt and a real Southern Baptist Republican type. And the story came out on the front page of the Dallas Morning News. Like, Fat and Gay was the title, and my face. So that was during the Tribeca Film Festival last year, and we haven't really talked about it. Really unhealthy.
I mean, you made Fat Girls before coming out to him?
Yeah, I did. I mean, he's not really involved in my world, so.
And he didn't know you were fat before?
I knew I was fat, just not gay. But, I mean, why didn't he know I was gay? It was sort of obvious throughout my whole life. Which I'm cool with. I mean, you know, I've always been the theater boy. I was destined to be gay from the beginning, from being born.
Well, I guess this is it. I figured it out. Holy crap. Being a fat girl is being comfortable being yourself. I finally found my inner fat girl. And I like her. She's totally cool.
This has been a conversation with Ash Christian, writer, director, producer, and star of the film Fat Girls. You can find more info about Ash on his website, ashchristian.com. This is Steve Fry. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Dixie Trichel, and Steve Fried contributed program material. Gwendy Joyson and the Weather Girls performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Free Radio San Diego, San Diego, California, CFUR, Prince George, British Columbia, WJSC, Johnson, Vermont, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And this is Deborah Bell
and with Jennifer Renee.
And Jennifer Renee. And And I have a reminder to thank all of those who pledged during our recent pledge drive. And don't forget to honor your pledge. If you would still like to contribute, go online to www.kpft.org.
Oh, yes. Thank you all of y'all, because we did real well. We actually covered most of the money they asked us to raise. Thanks to all of you out there.
And you also can go to our website to listen to archive shows, to like this one should be up tomorrow, right, and will be available for 60 days. So if there was a particular segment that you liked or whatever, you can download it and keep it and listen to it over and over.
If you didn't hear that we had announced that there's a runoff election on December 8th, you can go back and hear it.
And thank you for that reminder that we do have a runoff election on December 8th, and so it behooves you to get involved. And let's thank our guest. First of all, I had
Lily Roddy, who was here as a representative to talk about the Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is this Saturday at the Holocaust Museum, starting at 6:30, and it'll end about 9 o'clock, so come out.
And our political beat reporter, Jeff Reed, was with us talking about the recent elections and the runoffs. J.D. Doyle had a wonderful interview with our local artist, Alan Lett. He has a CD release party for his new release, A Moment Away, that will be at Salud Winery on November 16th.
That's Friday, for those of you who are calendar challenged.
And then the lovely Sabrina Matthews will be in here, be in town at the last stop, November 14th.
We only wish she was in here.
Well, yes. Well, she will be here in Houston, November 14th through 17th at the last stop. Next week, we will have Brad Odom from Salud Winery on, not to talk about wine, but to talk about his capacity as president of Pride Houston.
Oh,
he's going to talk with Jack Belinsky. And then we will have J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage.
That's right.
This time, his theme is songs about AIDS. I call it songs about loving, living, and lost.
I love that. That's beautiful.
But World AIDS Day is coming up December 1st, and I know our last show of November, we will have some special programming about World AIDS
Day. And we're going to have a New Year's Eve program.
Well, we're talking, because we'll be...
Well, we're on the air on New Year's Eve. I don't know about that.
We were talking about how we could kind of make a party out of that, but I think we should.
We could have guests come in, and they could call in.
And well, I think people should bring food.
Ooh.
And we'll just have a New Year's
and
party.
Gifts.
Yeah, they should bring us gifts, right. That's, I always like that. I always say that. I don't care what holiday it is, what religion is. If I can dress up, if there's food and presents, I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
Well, you've been with Glenn Holt, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, and me, Deborah Bell, on Queer Voices. And stay tuned for World Music Cafe following Queer Voices.
Good night.
And join us next week.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Belinsky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Belinsky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT is community radio, powered by the people. KPFT is radio for peace, radio for justice. KPFT is one of few radio stations where listener members vote for their board of directors. KPFT is committed to serving the underserved. KPFT needs your help by becoming a listener member and supporting the KPFT elections. So join us. Join KPFT 90.1 Radio and send in your ballots by November 15th. Ada Edwards reminding you that KPFT is our radio station.
The Pacifica Foundation is the parent organization of this station, and it's now holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's five local signal areas. By the time you hear this announcement, ballots will have been sent to qualified voters to participate in this year's local station board elections. Your vote is important. Local station boards help shape the direction of this station. Your vote makes a difference. If you think you are a member eligible to vote in your station's local station board election, you should have received a ballot, but you did not. You do still have time. Contact your local election supervisor, whose information is going to be at the end of this announcement. In the meantime, your ballot should be arriving soon. Voters are encouraged to research all the information presented by candidates, ask questions of the candidates and the staff, and be informed voters. Now, here's how you can contact your local election supervisor about lost ballots.
Email Mark Mewich at votekpft@gmail.com or call 713-526-4000. Watch for your blue envelope soon. KPFT, Houston.
The Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is now holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's five signal areas. These local station boards help shape the direction of this station, so your vote on potential board members is important. Perhaps that envelope is sitting on a kitchen counter or table, or in a basket with all your incoming mail. When you open it, it will contain, among other items, your ballot and return envelope. The deadline to get your ballot in is November 15th, and before you know it, that day will be upon us. So take a little time out of your busy schedule and vote. Voters are encouraged to research all information presented by candidates, to ask questions of candidates and staff, and to be informed voters in the interest of a better Pacifica Foundation. Check this station's website or pacificafoundation.org for our bio.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.